this paper was to try to think through two particular places. I'm only going to say a very little bit about London and then move on to the Nigeria case, because since writing the abstract, the developments that have been happening in Nigeria have led this to become a much broader paper than simply what happened in Kano in 2012. What I started with was this quotation from Foucault in the Space, Knowledge and Power interview, where Foucault is talking about the way in which manuals of police had suggested that the government of a large state like France should ultimately think of its territory on the model of a city, so that particular kinds of political technologies developed in an urban context got extended across territorial state as a whole. What I'm interested in wondering about is whether actually today we're seeing almost the reverse of this, where the territorial strategies that have been developed and ways that states operate across their territory as a whole are increasingly playing out within urban areas, and that this might be a way to bring together a number of different debates around questions of urban geopolitics, around borders in the city, about militarization of policing, and to think about how these territorial strategies get played out in an urban setting. Now, the quick example, which is the one about London, was to think about a particular wing of the Metropolitan Police, the Territorial Support Group, and about how they police, and they policed around the Olympics, and they've policed a number of other high-profile events and issues within the City of London. So that the student protests against the raising of tuition fees, some of the anti-austerity campaigns within London have been policed in this extremely militaristic way by this group. And this was a map that was discovered shortly before the Olympics of the operations map of the Territorial Support Group, part of the Metropolitan Police, in terms of how it was going to control areas of East London around the Olympic site. And that this group, if you look at their website, talks about a range of ways that they can provide a particular form of policing that uses what might be understood as military strategies, but within a policing system. So systems that maybe came from a more kind of territorial way of controlling space, a military controlling space, now being played out in an urban setting within the City of London. And that this map, you can maybe just see down in the bottom left-hand corner, the slogan, total policing, that this is how the Metropolitan Police now wants to control the City of London. Now, the Metropolitan Police's Territorial Support Group, I think the name of the Territorial Support Group is an interesting notion, but about thinking about how this might be working through. I've not done any real work with this question because I became much more interested in what was happening in Nigeria. So in Nigeria, on the 20th of January 2012, a number of terrorist attacks or attacks were launched against the northern Nigerian city of Kano. And the city of Kano, right up in the north of the country, the second largest city within the state of Nigeria, a city of about 3 million people, and a number of attacks by the group that's known generally within the Western media as Boko Haram launched attacks within that city. And what I was interested in that city was the way that Boko Haram actually launched those attacks. It wasn't simply going in and planting a bomb, it wasn't simply driving a car bomb, it wasn't simply going in as individuals and planting bombs, but they actually did a number of things that would ordinarily be thought of in terms of how military control of space might be done. They set up their own roadblocks within the city in order to create areas that were free from either military or police of the state of Nigeria, in order that then within those spaces they could conduct particular kinds of attacks on certain targets. They targeted a number of infrastructure facilities of the Nigerian state, so a passport office, the immigration service. They raided a number of police stations in order to free Boko Haram members from the cells of those police stations in order to reinforce their numbers for the attacks that they then launched. And the Western media suggests between 150 and 200 people died that day. The people I've spoken to who were in Kano on that day suggest the number was far higher, several hundred, possibly as many as 1,000 people killed. One of the reasons for the discrepancy in the numbers, a large number of those people that died that day were killed by the Nigerian security services, and that they have some wish to keep those numbers down in terms of how it might be perceived in terms of what they did as a reprisal or a response to those kinds of questions. So who are Boko Haram? Boko Haram are a group that are generally thought to have been based out of the three northeastern states there of Borno, Yobe and Gombe, and spreading into some of the neighbouring states such as Bauchi and Plateau State. And that their campaign is for a stricter form of Sharia, not simply the form of Sharia that has been implemented in 12 northern states in Nigeria over the last 12 to 15 years, but a much stronger form of Sharia, and this is one of the key campaigns that they've been making. a number of other arguments, though, and there are different factions within this group who have got conflicting aims. One of them is the idea of a secessionist northern Muslim state within Nigeria, or just in the northeast of the country. Other parts about the kind of the Christians should leave these areas and particular kinds of demands. There's some sort of territorial demands in terms of their reaction to the state. Who are Boko Haram? Boko Haram are a group that come from a variety of different backgrounds. There's a kind of set of political economy questions that we might ask. The Al-Majri group, the dispossessed poor young men, often have been gravitating towards this group as offering some kind of alternative to the way the Nigerian state is working, and the fact that so much of the oil wealth produced in Nigeria is not making its way into some of the other parts within that country. They're based, as I said, within those northern, northeastern states. Boko Haram as a name is standardly translated in Western media as something like Western education is sinful. That name is, I think, a misleading way to understand it. One of the key things that the group is interested in is a kind of a political economy type of critique. The idea that people who have benefited from westernization, either in the past colonialism or now the wealth that is coming out of that country and largely going to multinational companies, but the people that have been enriched by these processes who are then not giving back to the community from which they came. So something like westernization is sacrilege would, I think, be closer to the way that Boko Haram themselves understand what they see as their critique of Nigerian politics. Now, Boko Haram have been seen as a kind of a resistance to modern technology and resistance to some of the other ways in which politics has been understood in that country. But there's some complications about that. They use a number of Western tools, Western fruits of Western education, Western technology, that are then being turned back against initially the Nigerian state. And the vast majority of their initial attacks were towards the Nigerian state rather than any international targets. And this changed, though, in 2011. There were two quite high-profile attacks in 2011 that brought Boko Haram to a kind of a slightly more notorious status within Nigerian politics and to global attention. The first one was the bombing of a police headquarters in the capital of Abuja. This was actually just after I'd arrived in Abuja, just after I checked into a hotel, and then there was the explosion and the city was under a curfew for the rest of that day. But 2 months later, the United Nations building was also bombed. And that these two attacks were the first recorded suicide bombings within Nigeria. Many of the Nigerians that I spoke to at that time said that this was proof that Boko Haram had been infiltrated by non-Nigerians. Particularly, they would suggest people from Chad. And the argument that these people were making was no Nigerian would commit a suicide bombing. Unfortunately, this is not the case. There's clearly evidence of this as being a more extended tactic of Boko Haram after the last few years. Many of the attacks, though, that they've been launching have been much smaller scale attacks. There's the spectacular ones, such as what happened in Kano in 2012 or the UN bombing in August 2011. But many of their attacks are much smaller scale attacks. They're launching attacks by throwing small explosives off the back of motorcycles, often at people who are committing acts that they see as haram. So either people that are gambling, drinking in public, frequenting prostitutes. And so many of the smaller scale attacks are targeted towards individuals, and these often in the northeastern states, very little reporting of these in the Western media. Now, the breakaway idea within Nigeria is nothing new. Many people will know, obviously, about the Biafra War in the late 1960s of parts of that state that wanted to break away from the federal state of Nigeria. And the Biafra War was one of the first tests, in a sense, of the Cairo Declaration of the Organization of African Unity. In 1964, the Organization of African Unity had suggested that the territorial boundaries of the states at the moment of their decolonization constituted what they called a tangible reality that should become the states, the successor states, that would succeed through the process of decolonization on independence. But what you're seeing now is not so much in the southeast of the country, but in the northeast of the country, this pressure for a breakaway group. Now, Michael Watts is obviously the geographer that's written most about Nigeria. His classic book, Silent Violence on the North of Nigeria, has just been reissued by University of Georgia Press in their Geographies of Justice series. But more recently, Michael Watts has been writing about what's happening in the area that used to be understood as Biafra, particularly the southeast country around the Niger Delta, and the politics of oil and the groups resisting the way that oil is being taken from that country and the exploitation of that, and the way that that is not filtering back into the population as a whole. But what I think is useful in Michael Watts' work is that whether those categories could help us to make sense of what's happening in the northeast of the country rather than just the southeast. He talks about a number of what might be called political spaces or political geographies within Nigeria, some of which relate to the federal state of Nigeria and its borders, but often are political spaces that overlap or contradict those other kinds of spaces within the city. So there's a number of regional issues within Nigeria. The groups that Michael Watts has been writing about most recently, the movement for emancipation of the Niger Delta, a kind of a critique of the oil production processes and the wealth and the way that the wealth is not distributed within the state. There's Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb working in the northwest of the country, and the so-called Boko Haram working in the northeast of the country. Now, I showed you the map of the states, the 12 northern states that had implemented some form of Sharia since 1999, and the fracturing within the state of Nigeria is often looked at as a straightforward north versus south. North as the Muslim states, south as the Christian states. And if you look at the 2011 election, you can see that exactly the same states that have Sharia law to some degree are the states that voted for the person who was defeated in that 2011 election, Buhari. The southern Christian candidate, Goodluck Jonathan, was elected president through this election. Many questions about corruption in the election. But what's interesting is the way that these maps are representing, as if there is a straightforward north versus south, Muslim versus Christian representation. But like the blue and red maps of US presidential elections, this simply shows a simple majority in those states. Most of these states are actually fractured in a number of ways that are complicated and that complicate a straightforward north versus south issue. And certainly what's been happening in terms of the northwest of the country, which is where Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb has been operating more, and the northeast of the country with Boko Haram, complicates even a straightforward understanding of what's been happening in the north. So the city of Kano, where the attacks in 2012 happened, a vast sprawling city, as I said, a population of about 3 million, which has gone up very, very steeply over the last 40 or 50 years. It's a country with quite high population density, but with very, very few high-rise buildings. It extends like this for many miles in all directions from the kind of putative centre of the city. But what you see within that city is a kind of a privatisation of security. You can see up here, if I can bring the mouse pointer to show you, this is one of an example of the kind of compound living that people who have some kind of wealth within this city will live in, where there is a securitisation of a relatively small area of land within which there are residential dwellings, of a privatised security force that will operate within there, and an increased use of the sort of standard anti-terrorist kind of operations in terms of movement within the city, of roadblocks, of prevention of people moving in more than one car at a time, of using mirrors on poles to check whether the car has got some kind of explosives underneath it. All of these things are becoming more and more common in terms of Nigerian politics and the experience of it being in those cities. But you don't have to go very far from Kano to see that an older form of agricultural, pastoralist kind of economy is still existing in many places outside of the city. So it's a city of many contrasts and a city of many complications. But this is where the major Boko Haram attack just over a year ago was launched. Now, the idea that Boko Haram as a war on terror kind of thing, which the United States particularly is showing an interest in, is not exactly new. If you read the 9/11 Commission report, where they talk about the places where they think that Islamic terrorists are going to operate and where the US will then have to intervene in the future, this comes from 2004, and the second from last of those bullet points suggesting that West Africa, including Nigeria and Mali, will become sites where these operations will happen. This is almost 10 years ago that this was written, but this, I think, is playing out at the moment. So there's a wider regional geopolitical set of issues to make sense of some of the things that are going on within Nigeria. But what's been happening recently, in the most recent developments within Nigeria, when I was there in February, these were the things that were the most important events happening at the time in terms of Boko Haram, was a shift in a sense away from the targeting of high-profile buildings, infrastructure, government facilities, to a shift towards targeting medical personnel. And so that there was the killing of nine polio vaccinators within the city of Kano. There was the killing of three Korean doctors within Yobe State in the northeast of the country. And there seems to be a bit of a shift away from some of the earlier ways that Boko Haram was operating towards a shift towards some of the kind of more biopolitical kind of issues. whether geopolitics and biopolitics then need to be understood together to make sense of what is going on within Nigeria at the moment. And the stories around these were interesting. Why is there a resistance to polio vaccination within the northeast of the country? One of the reasons is because there is a line that it's the federal government trying to use the polio vaccine as a means of controlling birth rates in the northeast of the country. And minute traces of estrogen have been found in the vaccine in the past, which means that this is not without some kind of foundation as a story. The story with the doctors was an interesting one because the Western media reported initially that they were Chinese doctors, then that they were Korean doctors, and then that they were North Korean doctors. And the Western media reported that they were killed in their sleep. The Nigerian story is they were killed in their beds. They were killed in their beds with local Nigerian women that they were paying for sex. So the question then becomes, were they killed because they were foreigners, because they were medical personnel, or because they were committing acts that were seen as haram? So there's a whole set of questions here about not simply the spaces of northeastern Nigeria and a group that's seeking control over those questions, and not simply the legal regime that might be implemented within those spaces, but also a question of the bodies within those spaces and how there might be a whole set of complicated biopolitics alongside the geopolitics. And then most recently, the kidnappings that have been happening in the northeast of Nigeria. The Europeans that were kidnapped in the northeast and the French family that were kidnapped just over the border in Cameroon and then taken across the border into Nigeria. This is often characterized as being part of a group that's an offshoot of Boko Haram, known as Ansaru, but the idea of kidnapping and then ransoming is becoming something that was a tactic much more in the northwest of the country, but is being transferred more into the northeast of the country. Kano is almost impossible to get to now. It's certainly somewhere that no university insurance policy would allow you to get to. Abuja, though, which is where I have been going more recently when I've been going to Nigeria, Abuja is equally becoming incredibly securitized in terms of what's happening within that city. This is at the entrance to the Maitama Embassy District, which is also where the British Department for International Development have their offices and their residential quarters. If you go to Millennium Park in the center of the city, you can see what appears to be a palm tree in the distance, but when you get closer, you realize it's actually an infrastructure that allows a surveillance, allows various forms of control of these particular spaces, very close to the presidential palace. So there's a whole set of questions around the securitization of space within Nigeria as a response to some of the questions of Boko Haram. Now, in the Nigerian constitution, there's a passage about one of the things that the security services are tasked with doing. And one of those is defending Nigeria from external aggression, maintaining its territorial integrity and securing its borders. Now, in the work I've done on the war on terror, I've made the argument that the territorial integrity, an international legal notion that we find in the United Nations Charter, all of the United Nations Security Council resolutions and so on, needs to be understood in at least two ways. One is simple territorial preservation, keeping the territorial state as it is, not having parts of it break away, defence against secessionist claims, defence against territorial aggression from neighbouring states. But the other one is the extension of the state's sovereignty within those borders, the protection of the territorial right of the state, the Max Weber line about the legitimacy of physical force within a territory. And the Nigerian state is clearly struggling to control all of the territory that is notionally within its borders, particularly in the northeast. What it has done to try to keep that, to prevent that from being breakaway, to launch against Boko Haram, either preemptively or reactively in terms of Boko Haram strikes, that the Joint Task Force, a force of the Nigerian federal government, largely made up of southern Christian soldiers, is seen as an occupying force within northeastern Nigeria. So there's a lot of literature talking about whether Nigeria is a failed state. Now, the failed state notion seems to me to be a problematic one. It seems to be imposing some kind of Western ideal type on how every state should operate, not necessarily a useful way to think about those questions. But if one of the characteristics that's often used of a failed state is that a state is not in control of all of the territory within its borders, then Nigeria meets some of those criteria around thinking about those questions. Now, final point that I want to make is to try to link these to some wider issues within the region of West and into North Africa. Some of the ways that Boko Haram has been talked about have been to try to think about the links that it has to Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb, to think about whether it might have links to groups within Somalia, to think about a whole range of different linkages within Nigerian society and within the infiltration within the state, which is a standard way the Nigerian government talks about what Boko Haram are doing, but to then think about how this might open up questions if we look at wider regional issues. And one of the most striking, of course, is what's been happening recently in Mali. after the French intervention, the idea was that there would be an African-led force that would go into Mali in order to secure the territory that had been regained through the intervention by the French forces. And Nigeria sent a delegation or sent a part of its army over there in order to implement that policy of the African Union. But in moving from Nigeria here to Mali and going through Niger, that Nigerian military force was attacked within Nigeria, within the northwest of the country, as it was moving into the operation within Mali. So the wider geopolitical issues here, if we sort of extend out and think about the kind of way that this interrelates in a whole set of issues, the overthrow of Gaddafi within Libya, the implications that this has had into Mali, into Algeria, but to think about Nigeria, to also think about the fact that the US is putting a drone base in Niger, which will also involve a large number of US military personnel on the ground within this country. These wider regional geopolitical issues seem to me to be very important in terms of understanding the wider picture of what's happening. And the US Strategic Command for Africa, AFRICOM, has certainly been saying that Nigeria is becoming an important place where they're going to need to intervene in the future. And the document that I want to mention as the last example is about a US Naval War College report that was written about how the US should intervene much more actively within Nigeria. And that although this is not official policy, it's trying to think through the implications of what sorts of role the US might have within Nigeria in the future. And the idea of these is an engagement team, and the explicit model that this report suggests is to base this on how the US worked within Vietnam in the 1970s, but to think about a team that is about half US and half Nigerian that can preemptively strike against Boko Haram rather than simply reactively strike against Boko Haram. And the idea that this group would contain US military chaplains, intelligence, ordnance, Corps of Engineers, administrative, logistics, civil affairs and special forces personnel, agents from the FBI and CIA, US Agency for International Development, Department of Homeland Security, Department of Justice, and US Department of Agriculture. So a multi-agency force working with Nigerians to try to deal with these kinds of issues within the northeast of the country. The suggestion of this report is that this will preempt an all-out war. It may well be the very thing that triggers it. Final kind of comments, just a few last thoughts and comments on this question. The group we need to understand in relation to the question of territory, specifically territorial base, but also a claim on a particular territory within the northeast of the country. Legal complexities in terms of what legal regime operates within that area, about the legal regime of the federal government, but also the relation that might have to Sharia law. To think about the federal state of Nigeria and the government in terms of the territorial preservation, not simply the fixity of the borders, but also the territorial sovereignty within those borders. To think about the US and UK involvement that's going on at the moment, largely in terms of special forces, but it seems to be extending beyond that, and the Niger base, I think, is going to be a further implementation of those questions. And then if we're thinking about these medical issues, whether we need to think about a kind of biopolitical set of issues alongside these geopolitical issues. Thank you.
Thank you.